I just really want to start with building a picture about, you know, why do we need to sort of think differently, and why do we actually have to think about how education should be offered differently from what we, and I think all of we, had when we went through the schooling system. And I think Dee did a really quite good job of that this morning. And it's nice when these messages keep coming, because you don't feel like you're the only one out in the storm saying these sorts of things. But we grew up, or I grew up, in a time where in Australia, you know, manufacturing, this kind of environment, though this is probably a bit too old, but this is the Flickr CC image that I could get, you know, where manufacturing actually paid for our mortgage, and my mum and dad's mortgage, and the food that we ate, and the clothes, and all those sorts of stuff. And, you know, that image is absolutely shocking, but I hope you get the picture that it's a classroom where, you know, everybody's sitting, looking at the front, like a bit like what you guys are doing now. And there was somebody who was at the head of the room, and they were in charge, and they would be imparting their knowledge. You know, I'm throwing it at you now. Grab it. Got it? All right? Because you'll need that when I test you on it. And so that worked, that model worked fine when we sent them to this workplace. And all they had to do, and my mum was one of them, she supervised ladies, and I went there one day, it was a lady, and all she had to do was when there were 20 wires come off the line, she put a rubber band around it and she put it in the box. All day, right? The box filled up, they moved it on. And so they really didn't need people to think very much. They needed them to be physically fit. They didn't want them to think very much, because if they thought very much, they might ask for a pay rise. And not only that, they might ask for better conditions. So it was a model that worked for them. And I don't think we're sending them to the production line anymore. Is anybody sending any of their students to a production line? They need to be thinkers, yeah? And as a vet sector, we're told we need to do not mass production, but mass customisation. So we need to cater for the individual and create an experience for everybody. And as an educator, that's quite daunting when you're given 3 hours for 8 weeks to get through a topic and assess them in that time. And that's the resource. You've got a classroom. That was me, you know, to teach them double entry accounting in that time. So squeezing everything in and making this customised individual experience was quite a hard thing to do, and still is. The other part of it is, in the vet sector, is that we're not only being asked to give them those technical skills, but now it's about the foundation or the transferable skills that are really important as well. It's also digital literacy skills. So if you take nothing away from the conferences, you know, it's not just the technology. If the humans using the technology actually need a lot of skills or capacity to use technology effectively, and that's your digital literacy skills. And we want them to be creative and innovative decision makers, collaborators, because they're living in this very, very complex world. And, you know, we want them to be lifelong learners, and we talk a lot about them being lifelong learners. Where's my thinking about that? Okay, yep, I've got that right, sorry. It's the danger of doing it too early. What are people's thoughts about that scenario? Have people got comments or questions about that shift, but why we're moving towards more technology to sort of manage that mass customisation? You just can't do it all. So you, in terms of the mass customisation?
No, you can get it.
Well, it's not you. It's actually, that's what it's... it's not for you. It's about people that you can get this recording afterwards.
The point you must have is to get the mass knowledge.
So it's how you prioritise that and where it is. And that then comes to, well, what are your clients' needs? And I don't think we often think about our clients' needs. We're worried about the budget, and we're worried about how we're going to fit everything in, and we don't necessarily... So where I worked, it was very much a production line. We really didn't even ask what their interests were. We brought them in. People would come to the counter, or they would come to the information centre, and they'd come to the enrolment, and we'd enrol them, we'd get their money, and we'd push them into the class. And so we don't have the time to actually engage with people to find out, is this really what they wanted? What we did find out through a focus group of something completely different, they told us they didn't feel they were in the right course. So we had a number of people in our course doing something, paid money and their time, who will come out with a certificate that they won't use because it wasn't what they wanted. So there's a bit of a disjunct in terms of, yeah, we have the training, we have to get the numbers and the course conclusions, but the individuals we're doing it to, are we really doing what they want We're not. We're doing what was driven by a government policy that said we had to make so many hours in a time. And this is literally what our office manager said. If they've got a heartbeat and a credit card, get them in. Mm. Right? That's where our priority was. It wasn't about whether we were addressing their individual needs of what their learning needs to be. So, that's that lifelong learning, and I don't want to go too much into that because I could spend the whole 40 minutes just discussing that. Right, so yeah, reflecting about, so how do we record learning in the workplace now? So how are you recording your learning? How are you recording your learning, or how are you getting your learners to record their learning if you're leaving them in the workplace? Any examples at this stage? That's great. And I don't need it, but hey, it's a microphone, so I'm going to talk into it. Hairdressers, it's been really interesting that they've been like the moth to the light. When the digital, you talk about digital technology, they're like, oh, we're visual learners. You know, it's all about it's all about how you look. In fact, when you took the mic, I'm thinking, I bet you this lady's from Hair and Beauty because you look great. You know, everything looks really great. And I was because we work with a lot of Hair and Beauty people because their process and their product very visual. Who else is in a very visual industry? It is a much more interesting way for him and you to assess his knowledge. You know, rather than, oh, he could have written that three-page, regurgitated all the facts that you had given them, but no, and then also perhaps even contextualise the knowledge relevant to him, not just what was the textbook image. Okay, so let me just jump over to here and these technologies, whether they just be pen and paper technology based, can be captured. And there's that could actually, people seen that one in the top left hand corner, the smart pen? Who's using the smart pen at the moment? With students? Would you just tell us how you? Sorry, I shouldn't preempt you. Okay. Yes. So it's for your own learning?
Yes.
And who else is using it? Anybody using it with students? Nobody's using it with students at all? And so that smart pen, what it does is it's a pen, and it actually records, like a video, your movements. So your young man here that had drawn that picture, he could have used the smart pen and he could have drawn the picture and talked about how he's drawing the picture, why he's doing it, and it would keep a video of what he drew, how he drew it, and his audio at the same time. So you could have, obviously, there's a couple of things. You could have taken a video of him drawing it. You could have just taken a photo once it was finished. Yes. And then here, and so then he's got a digital version that he can share with anybody, and you as the assessor might not necessarily have to be in the same room as he does to do that, because you can do that. Anybody else heard of any other scenarios with smart pen and assessment? What people is in terms, again, recognition of prior learning, the RPL process. If you're doing a good self-facilitated assessment, so when you first meet the individual, you do what we weren't doing before, you actually ask them who they are and what they do, and you find out what they do straight away, and so you can then pick out the bits that belong to the training package and get them RPL around that. So you usually have a series of questions in an RPL facilitated conversation, and you're usually writing the answers as the person's talking. So I'm RPLing you, and you're giving me the answers, and this is what I'm doing. Yep. So what the people are doing with this now is perhaps asking the question or just writing question number one on the page, because you need the special piece of paper, and number two, number three, and what's happening is the audio is being recorded while we're having this conversation. I've only had to take my eyes off you a couple of times, so I write that down. Now, when I want to come back and think, oh, what was that answer you said for point two, I grab the pen, I go back to the piece of paper where I've written number two, and I press on it, and audio jumps straight to that space. They're also, if you've written things, so if you're madly writing things down, you upload it and then you can change it to text, so then you can start typing. So if you do any minutes, somebody has to write minutes for meetings, you can either do the handwritten stuff or the audio stuff or both. And so we've got all of the technologies to capture evidence differently. So when I was going through all of my education, and still now, and when I went through a reclassification of job, everything was text-based. You know, all of the work that I'd done in teaching had to be in a written journal. Right? They weren't interested in photos or videos because I don't think they really got that bit. And so my whole quite, you know, teaching's quite a practical vocation. But no, I had to write about everything about it. So there's ways that we can do it. Who's using digital stories? You want to share the what you do with your digital stories?
So my certificate for class is text-based.
Do you get them to talk over or write anything? Or?
They do.
Yep.
They often do like that.
And they like that?
They do. They love it.
So it's helping them select particular bits of work, and that they've had to reflect or self-assess as to whether or not this work is good enough to be demonstrating or presenting to other people. Okay, so the digital, what you can do is video or imagery of any sort, so the digital camera, and you can add music to what Michael did this morning. Who was in Michael's session at 9 o'clock this morning? I shouldn't say that because those of you who are late, like, oh, I'm not going to pull my hand up. I'm going to put my hand up anyway, so you know I wasn't late. So Michael ran that beautiful, those photos and those the movie behind it, very simple concept. Photo Story 3 is a free downloadable product. And, you know, like anything, though, you have to work out what is good evidence. Don't assume students know what good evidence is. Don't have it up here. Have examples for them. Have clear examples of what good evidence is, or what not good evidence. Because the conversations around the picture that that gentleman made, you know, if he had perhaps missed something out, the conversations perhaps as a peer group could have picked up what might not be good evidence as part of that. So you can have, you know, a bad example and a good example and ask them to compare it. So these are really important skills for your students to have. Don't assume they have those skills. They're not teachers, they're not educators, they're hairdressers, they're plumbers, they're carpentry people, you know, they're business admin people. They don't know what good evidence is, no more than what some of us sometimes do either. Some of you might have seen the point of view glasses. Anybody using the point of view glasses? Jeff's downstairs with all the little gadgets. Upstairs, I can't remember where we are. Downstairs, I think. Point of view glasses or point of view devices is that it's supposed to capture the view that the person's got. So my view at this stage is actually, you know, quite wide. I've got quite good peripheral vision. But what you've got is a pair of glasses. These were made for surveillance, okay? Anybody that thinks that that was made for education is far wrong. Anybody who walks around with dark glasses, a video camera in the middle, and video audio on the side is not trying to look for good evidence. Oh, well, no, maybe they are, but not the sort of evidence that hopefully your students are looking for. So what happens, this is those very practical-based stuff where people can be demonstrating, and some of the classic examples, I always think about the auto mechanics who have to demonstrate what they're doing under the car. You know, what do? You get in there under there with them? Or do you send them in? And also very good for developing your own learning objects. So if you're doing a lot of practical stuff, when you're doing it, wear the point of view glasses yourself. Capture the video of what you're doing, and then you've got that as a learning resource as well. They're hoping, and or they are, might be some of this stuff live streaming. So if you've got students at a distance and you want to leave them at the distance, not drag them, like our floristry people used to make the students come 8 hours into the city to demonstrate they could put a floral arrangement together. Imagine if you could just leave them back in their house and connect them up through the internet. And that can be a webcam. So just something most new computers now automatically have this little camera up here. Just leave them where they are and let them do what they're doing. And it can either be synchronously, so you can do that through Skype or through some other internet connections, or asynchronously, where they've recorded it and then they share it with you in another format. Anybody using the flip camera? So we've just got a video camera here. Yep, that's right, video cameras. Get told off by my children that DVDs are not videos. So video camera. And the beauty of this is it's not much bigger than a smartphone is, but it's got that little flip thing on the side. It's a USB drive. So you don't need to remember where the cord is. You don't need to have special software on your computer to get it off. If you can use a USB drive, If you can use that now with your or your memory stick stuff, better remember I've got to get mine back out of there. Sorry, I'm obsessive compulsive, so now that I've just said that, I'm going to put that there to remind me. So if you can use that little memory drive, then you can use this VIP camera to capture evidence and upload it. But again, they need to be shown what is good evidence. So somebody said to me once, oh, I use those point of view glasses. Oh, they sent me an hour worth of rubbish. And it's like, well, did you show them what you were actually looking for? Did they know what it was? You said to get capture workplace evidence. I captured workplace evidence. I didn't know what was going up in your head. I don't have a crystal ball. So give them examples. You know, what happens usually is your students usually have the best examples. So for your first time through, you have to really crash together a couple for yourself to show the students. But once you get students through a course, you'll find that some of them produce the best work. And if you ask them, I found about 95% of the time my students said, yes, you can use this as an exemplar in the next class. Right? I wouldn't use an exemplar in the same class, but in the next one. And then most smartphones, and I do need to update this, that's the old N95, most phones have some kind of audio, video and digital. It might not be great, but it will capture the evidence, and they would prefer to use what they already have. Any questions about those technologies we've talked about already? Or anybody using mobile devices to capture evidence? And most of the people in the vet sector in the workplace would have a mobile phone. I'll get you to leave it there if that's right until we come back that way. And then, but the thing is, are the employers happy about them bringing out the mobile phone? I'm from Adelaide, we have the submarine court there, so if you're anywhere in the defence sector, there's no way you're going to get any of those devices in. All right, so in some engineering firms, so intellectual property, if you're childcare services, you really need to consider who's taking photos and where those photos are going. Are the parents advised about photos are being taken? So there are some digital literacy and critical literacy skills that need to be taught around. It's really easy to just pick the camera up and, you know, take the stuff, but it's all the educative stuff you need to go with it. Privacy, okay, what is appropriate evidence? That's what needs to be built up with. I'm just going to quickly go through these other ones, blogs, online journals. If I've got time, I'll show you some mock-up things that I've done. You know, in the trades, they make students write logs, you know, books, which is part of it. They make them write, you know, and I'll see if I can get a chat. In fact, I might do it now. I'll go out and show you. Yeah, look, it's important that they write, and literacy is really important, but in most of the trades, it's very visual, and I'll show you that. And then this one in the school sector has made me think of this one, is we give everybody paper-based certificates, and there's I haven't got time to go into where we want to actually make their parchments digital. We want them to be able to have online access to all of their results, regardless of who they've ever been with. That's the long-term aim of the project I've been looking after. But even simple, you know, certificates of participation or whatever it is that we give out, we give them a paper version. And then in the school, I was listening to the school saying, you know what they do? Oh, the first thing we did for the kids' portfolios is we scanned all of the certificates. And I'm not saying don't give them paper-based, because we love hanging our kids' stuff up on the fridge, but give them a digital version as well. So you're sort of shortcutting, not these ones, but a lot of them, they're digital somewhere, and then you're printing them off. So. Okay, what I might do is jump out then and show you what I mean by the blog. So this is my own e-portfolio, and within which, this is a Mahara-based e-portfolio system, within which I've created some mock potential how you might use e-portfolios for assessment. And I work with a guy, quite friendly with a guy who teaches plumbing at TAFE's Day, and so some of the stuff looks like I might understand plumbing, but I don't. I just, you know, he would come and say, oh, I'm running this, you know, central session with these people, and we're going to talk about bad plumbing. So in my head, I've got this bad plumbing, you know, bad plumbing. So I called it poor plumbing examples. And so think the logbook of a trade person. All right, I'm just going to write, this is what I did today, not very engaging. And because I'm a very practical type of person, I've probably got some literacy skills that make me really excited about writing. But let's say if I had to come in and perhaps do some writing or audio or video, describe what was wrong with something in the workplace, or describe what was something that was good in the workplace. So that this one says, and here's an example of some poor plumbing. I arrived at a house today, there were some obvious examples of poor plumbing practice. The bad workmanship was so obvious, you could see it from the street with cracks running down the side of the house with no concrete around the house. There was nothing to support the structure when the leaking occurred, right? So that, yeah, that all makes sense. But then when you see this picture of what this person's seen, hopefully it comes up. Yeah, okay, and it's interesting. Right? Now, that tells a thousand stories, doesn't it? So, yes, I could have said, you know, I saw a house and had a crack down there, and that was good, and I can see you're really quite good. But, you know, it's like, yeah, haha, now I see why we put concrete around the house. I always thought it was for me, so I didn't get my feet dirty when I walked around it. So the impact of having something visual is so important for people, and I think we're getting better and better at it. Now, what time are we finishing? 1 o'clock? So I've got 12 minutes. Does that sound right?
One.
What, a bit more? Somebody will give me a bit more depending on what... No, because there's the plenary. Because I said, oh, it's lunchtime. I'm on a different program today. And Melanie went, no, it's plenary. You've got to send them all into the plenary. I went, oh, okay, no worries. I'll go. And so don't go over time, basically, Alison. So this is work done by a gentleman called Rob Stoll. So I have attributed his stuff down there because I've just basically taken his PowerPoint and stuck it up there. I haven't done anything but wrote his name down the bottom there. But I can see there that you can't see his name, Rob Stoll, and next time I'll blow that up and give him the attribution better in text. And this is leading into the assessment for learning stuff. We do assessment of learning at the moment. So we call that summative assessment. That final bit, or the stuff that we test them on during the course, is summative assessment. It's when, after the fact of that you've been with them and helped them understand what their new skills and knowledge are. And so he's talking about, well, you know, in the past, teaching was very teacher-centric. So that image I gave you at the front, and where a lot of schools still are, my kids' schools, not much better at this day to this time there. And it's about testing, and it's all about what your knowledge is. And now we're actually moving sort of now into, you know, it should be more learner-centred, and it's about what the learner produces, and competency and authenticity. And then he's saying in the future, like I'm saying, is you have to have quite complex skills to be working in this environment. It was interesting, the lady that talked about the ADD child, who might be the leader, you know, the world leader of the future, because they're the ones that are coping with. You know, I think if it was ADD when I was around, I think that might be what they would have said. I was a little bit ADD. But, you know, that because we're quite complex and chaotic thinkers, we can deal with the situation. So how do we, if those people aren't chaotic, how do we help them move into this space here? And... So he was saying that he's talking about where we spend a lot of energy on the summative assessment, on testing whether students got it then and there. So basically the final bits of what we're doing. And that's important to have that. Remember, that's what the auditor's looking for. You know, the auditor's not going to ask you for your assessment for learning stuff. They're going to lash you out of learning. You know, where's the quiz? Where's the assignment and whatever it is there? But there's two other stages of assessment. What are the other two stages before we get to summative assessment? As a sector, we're focused in on that assessment, but there should have been two stages before then. You know what? One starts with D, the other starts with F. Formative assessment. This is the formative assessment stuff. The one before that? Diagnostic. The stuff we weren't doing, and probably still aren't doing, our students when they come in. We don't ask them, who are they? What do they do? What do they want? Because I'm sure if we had to ask some of these people when they come in, most of them probably didn't know. You know, you often get students, oh, I don't know, I'm just here because, you know, you're down the road, or you guys do the best marketing, or I heard, you know, my sister said it was a good course. So they sometimes don't know, but some people do know where they want to go. And so we can help diagnose where they are and where they want to go and where the skills gaps are to do that. There's formative assessment, and we should be doing a lot of formative assessment around, you know, what, Are they understanding? I used to think, oh, homework was because you wanted to keep them busy at night when their parents were doing dishes. But it's the homework I used to get them to do was so that I knew what I'd taught them that day actually gelled. And it was interesting because one time I taught double entry accounting and I started using red arrows across the page to demonstrate. Because you've got to, I don't know if you know it, but you've got to carry that down there. So it's quite abstract. And so next week, you know what came on the homework pages? Big red arrows. I'm thinking, no, that's not. No. So next time I need to explain to them, this is just a visual I've given them, and this is not part of that example or exemplar of what the information is about. And it helps you focus on where the gaps are for them. You know, what do they need to learn? And so the assessment for learning, there's a whole gamut of stuff here, and I'm not going to read through, or you won't have time to read through there, but it explains why we need to not only just focus on the summative stuff, but the formative stuff can be really important. All right, so this bit here develops the learner's capacity for self-assessment, or what the higher ed would call reflection. Okay, and I know that often when I talk to people in the vet sector, people think, oh yeah, people in vet don't reflect. No, but we should be encouraging them to assess themselves to whether they're competent or not. We need to give them the skills to do that and to becoming reflective and self-managing learners. So it's important, the skills, and I'll show you what they are. The other thing before that, though, is, you know, we have theories of learning. And it doesn't give you the answers. I was like, what? That's not fair. It doesn't give you the answers, but it gives you some principles to work around. And in adult education, it's called androgyny. Is that right? Andragogy, thank you. I'm like, some of these words I struggle with. And, you know, the learner learns with all of their senses, not just the reading and the writing bit, the smelling bit, the hearing bit. Who smelt something and a memory's come back just like that? All right, so your body learns and records that learning in all different ways. They need feedback on their progress. So it's interesting that we've got these theories of learning about adult learning that we're perhaps not taking too much focus because, you know, what does the auditor want? The assessment. What does the assessment look like? How do you know that you're validated? You know, how authentic is it? All of those sorts of stuff. And we spend a lot of our time, our very valuable and limited time on that, and perhaps we miss some of this. I'm not saying we all do, but it's important too. And so when I had the fortunate chance to work with Rob last year, he comes up, it's not just his, he's built it up from some other researchers, around the five principles of assessment for learning. So how do you support this? And the one he calls it sharing learning experiences, or a picture of competence. How do they know that they're going to be competent? So if you're going to assess them for a particular unit of competence, right, what is that unit of competence? What does that unit of competence actually look like? Give it to them up front. As soon as they come in, this is where you're going to be. Some places what they do is say, this is where you are now, this is where we're going to get you there, how do you think you might get there? So that was the higher ed. Higher ed, I think, have a lot more luxury than we do because they keep them for 2 to 4 years. Often, I had them for 3 hours, for 8 weeks, and I pushed them through as quickly as I could. But up front, you need to explain to them, you know, where are you going? What are you aiming for? Where's the target? So give them that experience. Don't hold it up here. And don't think you're giving them the answers up front. You're not, all right? You're helping them understand. What about yourself? Like, I've shown you a quick example of an e-portfolio. So if you've never heard about e-portfolios before, you know what the first question I get asked? What does it look like? What does it look like? And I've got a handout. I think I've given it. So there's examples there if you are at the stage where you're just still trying to understand what is an e-portfolio. That's the first thing you'll want to do. You'll want to go and see somebody else's. The first thing you'll want to do. And then you'll come back with the questions as to what it is and how it is. So that's really important. Questions. So asking questions of the group, however format. So I'm doing a poor job of that in that I'm pushing out a lot of content at the moment and not asking to find out how much are you taking that in. But what I would do if I had you for a period of time is I would probably then go ask you to go off and answer some questions or go and do some activities. So then I could see whether or not what I was hoping to teach you was actually getting in the way that it could go in, because it doesn't mean always. And then once I've asked you these questions, or I've given you these tasks, I need to give you some feedback. And I need to give you quite quickly, or what Rob also calls feed forward. Feed forward. Okay, so you went off, you built this chair, it's actually only got three legs on it, and so in order for you to get, you know, from this three-legged chair to this four-legged chair, you know, what sort of things are you going to need to do to get from here to here? And so these are some things you could do. So I'm leading you down the path of where you're going. I'm leading you forward. So the feedback's not just about what you can't do. So yes, look, you know, we actually need a four-legged chair in this run, otherwise people are going to fall off, and this is how you can go about doing it. So important. The self-assessment stuff, hopefully that's come through in some of the conversation, the stuff that's come through. But once we've given them the picture of confidence, how do they then know whether they're confident? And I think this is really key, because in the workplace, how are they recognised? So once they're finished with you and they've got that job and they're doing it, how will they know they've done it properly if you haven't given them these assessment for learning skills? Oh, hang on, I'll just wait for my boss to decide whether or not this is appropriate or not. And that's not what bosses want, generally. They want self-motivated thinkers. And then in the workplace, when you work, in your workplace you work, who determines whether or not you're doing the job well or not, other than you? Who makes judgments about whether this job's completed or not completed, or needs to go a stage forward, or you haven't filled out your role book properly? That's what, you know, don't worry about whether you're a good teacher or not, but whether your role book wasn't. So who? Your supervisors? And also your peers. So the people around you determine about whether or not your work's... And we have those conversations quite often. So, but don't think that, again, that you just go, oh, peer assessment, right, you three are going to assess her. Yeah. And then, oh, less marking for me. You have to give them the skills to be good peer assessment. When I talked about this the other week and I had more time to talk about it, a lady described how she did some peer assessment with a group. The first thing the students did was had empathy for her, how hard assessing somebody is. They just took it for granted that that's, you know, as a teacher, you just know that like that. And also, because they weren't just doing it for one audience, you and me, I was doing it for my peers. You know what? The quality of the work changes, doesn't it? Because I don't want my peers to make me look, you know, I want to look silly in front of my peers. I want to make sure that they think I'm doing a good job. Now, I can't go on anymore because I think we're finished. And so then it would be into what the e-portfolio is. But I think it's important, one is that we capture evidence differently, but we have to actually give them these skills to be managing their own learning. And then it's the portfolio, it's the online personal space where they bring this stuff together and they get to change, get to decide who gets to see what, how they see it, and reuse that information more than just for the assessment. So the examples that you've given and you've given, where, you know, that portfolio that was an assessment for you is also very valuable to a potential employer.
I'm not sure